Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Well, hi, everybody. This is John with my two dear friends and colleagues, Deborah and Root, who are currently in the UK. And the three of us have done a lot of village building together in many, many places. We've reached all over the world with this model. And, you know, what we're doing is we're tracking connections, you know, to another level. When you talk to Deborah and Root, you'll start to understand that there's way more to this than just simply saying, start with inspiration and go to motivation. And, you know, there's many, many layers, which I'll pull out a little bit of the origin story of that. And I'm really thankful for the two of you saying yes to this. It feels really, really fun to remember, really, to relive these moments we shared together and all the things that you guys have helped to manifest. So first, let's hear a little hello and a gratitude from each of you. We'll start with you, Root.
Hi, thanks for having me along. I'm originally from the North Shore of Lake Ontario. My family's from Tsuchage, which is unceded Haudenosaunee land, otherwise known as Montreal. And I had this whirlwind romance with Deborah a few years back. And now I'm living here in the land of the Duratrigues people, the originally were the Hard Hill people, and it's now called the County of Dorset. And we're in a co-housing community, which I can't wait to tell you lots more about. And I think Deborah's awesome.
That sounds pretty good. How about you, Deborah?
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Ruth. Well, it's lovely to be here. Very excited to be starting to talk about village building with you both again and sharing some of our experiences with that over the last, 10 years, something like that, right? Yes, I am very grateful for this co-housing that we've moved to 5 months ago, because it means that at a whole new level, we get the opportunity to be part of village building happening right now all around us. It's a new co-housing in that we're only just all starting to live together. However, for the last 14 years, people have been trying to make this vision come about, and we've only been involved for the last 3 years. But I'm so grateful that we've been accepted into this group, that we've been able to have a home here, and that now we're able to actively village build with around 110 people, right, Ruth? And over 30 children and babies up to elders, with a little bit of land to look after together. And yeah, it's just wonderful. So I'm so grateful for that and for this place that we're getting to know, and all the beings of this place, the people and the animals and the plants and everyone that's here and I'm getting to know.
Well, I love that. So a little blast from the past here. I like to go to the origins a lot, you know, because it always helps to remember where are we now? Where have we been? Where are we going? You know, when I started my project in 1983, and I was joined by that marvelous one-of-a-kind elder, Ingwe, who had grown up in an Akamba village and was adopted there. And he was of British descent, born in the Western Cape of South Africa, but moved up to Kenya in 1914. Well, no, he was born in 1914, moved up there in 1920. So there was, as he liked to say, Nairobi was the end of a train rail with a bunch of wooden buildings, you know, like shacks and hovels and things, you know. And so he didn't have anyone from his culture's background to play with. And so he was essentially taken in by the Akamba tribe, and he was raised. He spoke more Kikamba than he spoke English. So he had an immersive experience of village growing up. And when I met him in 1983, he basically said, we have to build a village around what you're doing. You take the children and you go in the forest. You know, I'm now at that age where I can't walk as well as I used to, and I'll sit and I'll work with the parents, and while you take the children. And so we did that together for 12 years. And unfortunately, I never actually saw what he did, you know, but all I know is that suddenly my children were surrounded by this amazing group of allo parents, you know, aunties and uncles, right? Not of blood, but of relationship. And what he was doing was village building. And he was doing it at such a high level and so beautifully. We ended up with this marvelous community of all ages and stages of life, you know, similar to what you were just saying about your co-housing community, but it wasn't co-housing. It was, you know, co-location for certain activities, be they potlucks, be they nature events, be they crafting events, whatever it was, but we kept the routine going. So he was doing all of that. And, you know, we grew these amazing children into these powerful beings all over the place, right? There was hundreds and hundreds of them. And everyone was saying, wow, what are your kids doing? I want my kids to be like your kids, you know, so that we were attracting more and more people. And what we were doing, of course, was working with the tracking connections, you know, concepts, you know, the eight shields, which in those days wasn't called eight shields because it was just what we were doing. We hadn't, you know, named it all yet, you know, and it wasn't until 1995 when we started to realize that our the children that were aging out and we were getting busier and busier with adjudicated youth programs and serving orphanages and working with state run programs. And we got so spread out, but our adult programs began to shrink and shrink. And New Jersey wasn't exactly the place where that kind of thinking was welcome anyway. Like all the adults who came would say, oh, my family thinks I'm weird because I do this stuff, you know? And, you know, it was sort of like the, I don't know what you would call them, like the disaffected people, you know? And so it wasn't like ripe for village building as on the meta community scale, you know, the Monmouth County suburb of New York City kind of scale. It was a very different kind of energy there. And I started to fly out to Washington State. I had started to teach with Ingwe, what are we doing to train adults? Because the kids were magic. The adults were wondering how we were pulling this off and they wanted to know. And that's when Ingwe and I had to stop being unconsciously competent and start to think about, well, what are we doing? What can we teach these adults that they could be more helpful and do it in their families and so on? So we started to experiment with that. In 95, I was flying out to Washington, you know, for the third time or so. And there was hundreds of people showing up for my weekend workshop, hundreds of adults clamoring. They're like, oh my God, you need to bring this here. We are the people you're looking for. We've been looking for you, you know, that kind of a thing. And we were actually, our revenue from our travels to Washington and the San Francisco Bay Area, a few trips a year were greater than our entire New Jersey annual revenue. And it became obvious to one of the board members, Tony Moon. He said, I think you should move to Washington and fly to New Jersey. It would make more sense, you know. And so we did. We uprooted. And unfortunately, Ingwe couldn't come. You know, his wife was still working. You know, they were pretty settled. He was getting on in years. And he said, John, I'll fly out a few times and help you, but I can't move with you, you know, and I'll miss you terribly, you know. And so we had a sad departure. We had a big event at a local center and hundreds of people came. We had a big music concert and, you know, we all played on the stage, like open mic style, took turns and told stories and everyone wished us well. And it was just, you know, tearful and beautiful. and off we went. And then I get to Washington by myself and I suddenly realize I have no idea what Ingwe did. And I know I have to do the whole thing all over again. So I was on the phone to Ingwe. Ingwe, what did you do first? What did you do second? Right. And he helped me to understand at that point, we had distinguished some of the language around the six shields at that point. And we talked about what village building meant, how to take the same principles from just working with a child's journey to inspire them, to motivate them, to get them focused, you know, to take them around the natural learning cycle, to organizing people in those archetypes, to, you know, thinking about the elders as a guild, thinking about the parents as a guild, thinking about the teenagers as a guild, and leveraging each of their gifts to serve the others, you know. And this began a series of workshops that Ingwe would fly out for, but I would hold them every Monday at the Stonehouse Bookstore. And we called it The Art of Mentoring. And every Monday for 2 hours, we would set up, you know, with little clans, little groups, work groups. People would always go to their group and we would have societies around the directions. And, you know, we would do this thing for 2 hours every Monday night with breakouts and coming together for stories and harvests and things like that. We did it for 16 weeks. And then we had occasional weekends during that series where Ingwe would fly out. right? And then we flew in Jake and Judy Swamp, and, you know, we had this thing. Then we did a series on peace building and relational modeling, you know, 16 weeks. And that's how we built Village in this area where we had no village. And we went from scratch to an incredible, vibrant community that is still going and regenerating around Wilderness Awareness School. I left there in 1999 and left. I mean, I had so many empowered people that knew exactly what to do. They had an elders council. They had, you know, everything was now working. They have preschool, you know, young children, preteen, teen programs, all the whole nine yards. And that is a vibrant, very functional, beautiful community that continues to grow and spread. And there's literally thousands and thousands of families that are now involved in that. And it's just such a beautiful model. Well, once I saw it work, you know, once the recipe was there, I was like, well, I got to give more communities in this, you know, and I started to travel around and teach other communities. And I just started to see this vision, like, we need to teach this pattern out to every community that wants it, you know, because some communities don't need it. They've already got, you know, they've already got a regenerative community going. So, but for those who don't and don't have an idea of how to do it, this has been really helpful and a big blessing. So I started to create this program called Village Builders. And I did this thing called the Village Builders Toolkit. And I went over to Scotland at the time. Was that 2015, Deborah? I think it was. I think that was 2015.
Yeah. Was it? Because I met Root in 2015, and I think I'd already done the program at that point.
Well, I think it was right around then. So yeah, somewhere, plus or minus a year. Yeah, I was teaching a course with Anna Breitenbach, the great animal communicator, yeah, and we called it Intuitive Communication and Tracking, ICAT, yeah. was the acronym that I
That's right, I
have.
I was on that one too, yeah.
Right, and then this is where Deborah and I began speaking, right? It turns out by synchronicity, you could call it coincidence, I don't think it was, that she had booked in as part of the what we call the ACORN, which is the team that works on the Eight Shields model. We had an ACORN and we had a vacancy, and Deborah got in at the last moment. And she ended up living in the quarters that we were staying in, Anna and I. And that led to some really amazing conversations. One in the courtyard, many in the kitchen, where I just started telling Deborah about this Village Builders thing. And she's just like, I have to be part of that. I'm like, yes, you do. And we had so much fun on that journey. And then we started teaching village building together. And then Root joined us, and we just did so much good work together. And these two have taken it all over the place and continue to do great work and influence, as you heard in their shares, and their gratitude alone. And so just imagine when we open the valve and let them speak about this stuff, you'll start to get an idea of the potential and, you know, how fun it is to take the Eight Shields model and look at it as it scales up in different layers, how it gives you the instructions to create a full-on regenerative village, which is what people feel when they come to an Art of Mentoring, because we use that same map to create the event called Art of Mentoring. And it makes people feel within a couple of days like, oh my God, I want this in my life every day, you know, which was always our goal. Like, we want them to remember, what did it feel like to be in a village? So that when they go home and look around and say, wow, this system is really flat, I need to build Village. You know, that's the intuition that people get automatically. And then we hope to provide them with tools. You know, that's our goal. So the three of us are endeavoring to start another Village Builders segment of the Living Connection First Village. And we'll start to gather some village builders from the past, you know, 10 years. And we'll gather other people interested in village building, and we'll start to do that model again, like we did at the Stonehouse Bookstore, but we'll be doing it virtually so we can reach people all around the world. And the three of us have amassed quite basically what could be a textbook. And Root is a fantastic editor and a fantastic curator. He's a DJ, by the way, which is an amazing skill. So he's been our DJ, and he pulls things out of Deborah and I and gets them onto paper, and then he edits them and adds things to them and has put together a trove of stuff that is worthy of a series of books, which we will do. So that's who we are. And I just wanted you to, you know, properly meet these folks and have them share a little bit of their experiences. And I think who would like to start? I think we'll start with Root again. We'll stay in the same order if that works. Oh, no, maybe we should start with Deborah because, yeah,
We should start with Findhorn. You briefly mentioned Findhorn, and I think Deborah needs to talk a little bit about what that is because some people might not know.
Yeah, great. And you alluded to that story of how I ended up on that program, John, and that's actually a really fun story. So at that time, I had got interested in the art of mentoring and the Eight Shields methodologies in 2011 because we had one of the week-long camps just down the road from me in 2011. And I'd met some really cool people locally who had said, you definitely need to come to this camp because I'm a wildlife guide and an ecologist. And I was also living in this sustainability retreat center run by a community of people that lived there and hosted guests. And I was running Nature Connection programs, or it was more like wildlife watching programs at the time, not so much necessarily Nature Connection, because I didn't really know what that was. So in 2011 to 2013, I was fortunate enough to go to a number of Art of Mentorings as a participant. And then I think by the third one, I went as a volunteer. So I started to bring the practices to these two places where I was in, right? The retreat center that I was running, I started bringing the practices there. And I can tell some little stories about this later if you want, but I'll just be brief now. And I started bringing the methodologies and practices to my programs that I was running over weekends and weeks with families and adults. And then I saw that Anna and John, who I hadn't really met, you know, I'd seen John as a speaker at some of these events from a distance, but I hadn't met him. I saw they were going to be running this week-long animal communication and tracking program at Findhorn. I think I saw it the year before when it first started being advertised. And I so wanted to do it and so knew that I didn't have the time or money to do it that I literally blocked it out of my head. Like, I made it not exist anymore. And then 1 week beforehand, a dear friend of mine said to me, by the way, I'm supposed to be a volunteer on that program and I've double booked myself and I have to go to Hungary or something to run a youth program. Aren't you into that stuff too? Would you like to take my place? And I was like, oh my God, yes. I didn't even know they were having a volunteer team. And so then I rang up Findhorn. So Findhorn is the eco village that has... Well, Findhorn itself is a town in northeast Scotland, a coastal town. And Findhorn, the Findhorn Foundation and the Findhorn Eco Village are an intentional community and eco village and education centre that has been there since the 60s, running all sorts of programmes around personal and spiritual development and sustainability and community building. And they're going through a lot of transformations at the moment, but that's not the story for right now. And the retreat centre that I was co-managing, the Retreat and Sustainability Centre, was sort of affiliated with Findhorn. It was kind of a spin-off. It had its own organization, its own team, but we were closely related. So I would hang out in both places. So when I rang Findhorn to say, you know, I'm going to be a volunteer on this program, is there any chance I can come and stay on site? Otherwise, it's going to be difficult for me to concentrate if I'm going back to this residential center every night and getting pulled into team stuff and work stuff. And they said, oh, sure, we've actually got a spare room in one of the bungalows. I was like, great. So I turn up on the day and I get my key to the bungalow and I go in and there's John and Anna. And I'm a little starstruck, obviously, at the time. And I remember thinking, how am I not going to be an annoyed, starstruck person this week? How am I just going to be like truly helpful? And I thought, well, I'm local. I have a car. I can, you know, go do grocery runs and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what I did. I just tried to be helpful. And that led to then us, yeah, becoming kind of buddies and having all these great conversations. And I started telling John about the retreat center and the community that were running it of sort of 10 staff and 5 volunteers and how we were trying to build community with local people in the region who thought we were kind of, you know, who are the hippies down that weird, that long driveway doing stuff in that big house? How are we going to build community with them as well? And so I was, you know, we had these conversations and John said, you need to come and do this program that I've just started. And I said, yeah, I saw that advertised. It looks amazing. And John gave me a bursary so that I could come do that program. So that was really a massive life-changing moment. And I remember driving over to my mum's house that night after you offered me that bursary, John, with the windows down, with music blaring and my hand like out the window, just so excited and happy that I was going to get to learn these village building skills and bring them to the places that I was working. So that's a little bit more about that story.
That's a fantastic other side of the story. I love hearing that again. It makes my hair stand up. It's great. The one thing we can say about Findhorn is that it is a vortex for synchronicity. Like, that's the thing ever since its founding. There's a wonderful book called The Magic of Findhorn that kind of lays out some of that. But man, there is some that place is always, always magical. There's so many synchronicity stories from people around that place. It's literally a vortex for synchronicity. So
absolutely. And me and Root fell in love there as well through another whole strange set of synchronicities. So that's a whole other story for another time.
Yay. Well, what's happening on your side, Root?
Just the lovely piece that connects there is that I learned about all of this stuff through Deborah and John because it had been happening in my own backyard. I just didn't know. At that time, I was mostly based in Western Massachusetts, but I had been traveling around to visit various communities and various centers, kind of thinking like, surely there must be some people that are trying to do this on the ground. How can I go learn more about that? And that's how I ended up at Findhorn. And Deborah had been living there for, I think, 12 years, and so had really an established community there, a lot of people she knew and who loved her. And so when we did get married, we had three ceremonies, and the first one was the Scottish one. And we used a lot of the village building techniques in the preparation and the day of the wedding. And I think that worked really, really well. It relieved a lot of the stress from Deborah. It's definitely relieved a lot of stress from me. And I really got to see how it gave a lot of people something to do, right? So like a lot of folks couldn't contribute monetarily, but they had extra time or they had certain skills or they were just willing to show up and decorate various things in various ways. And so there was a lot of sense of community coming together for that event. And it touched me in my heart. And when we tried to replicate something similar in Massachusetts later in that year, it was different, but there was also some of the same elements because we had invited some of the Eight Shields practitioners from Vermont to come and be part of it. And so there was that awareness was still rippling through the group. And there was a sense of like, oh, I see what you're trying to do by distributing the tasks. And oh, I see that this is more of a jointly held community celebration.
Yeah. So using that, what we call the acorn model, which, you know, people sometimes say, what is this acorn thing? You know, it just basically says, well, there's eight archetypes. So let's make a team. And whoever has that East archetype, that inspirational kind of welcoming archetype, would be a great East, you know? So then they start to do the welcoming stuff. And, you know, those people who are super motivated and like to walk around and do stuff and show people things, you know, that these would be great people to help orient the guests as they're arriving, you know? So I've actually known a lot of people who have used the Eight Shields to plan weddings, you know? So like when we started this, we never thought, oh, there'll be Eight Shields wedding planners. But, you know, I've heard so many beautiful stories. And because everyone is contributing, you know, and everyone knows that their contribution is valued, right? They all understand what to do, and this beautiful synergy happens, right? And I've seen that, you know, we've done funerals with this, we've done, you know, big, of course, we've done art of mentorings with it. The biggest one I was ever at was 450 people in Scotland, the last one I was at, you know, I was amazed at how it scaled, you know, and how intimate it felt, even though there were so many people. It was not just a bunch of people in a place, you know, there was order and sacred order to it. It felt sensible. And there was lots of little, as Root likes to say, like the festival tents, you know, there's the tent with the village builders, which Deborah was running. And I would pop in and talk there. And there was the tent with the youth, you know, and then they had their backwoods camp and, you know, they had the hearth and the wellness area, you know, they have all this stuff. Oh, the musicians, good God. So many amazing musicians and traditional Scottish storytellers and traditional local musicians, as well as folk musicians and songwriters and poets. And there was a native elders there from North America, one particular powerful healer named Barry Moses. And so there was just so much amazing. Oh, and the bard, Margot, my goodness. You know, just she would watch and be part of something that happened during the day. And then that evening she would sing the song of the day. And I thought, oh, that's a wonderful song, Margot. Where did you get that song? That was the perfect song for today. She said, did you happen to record it? I'm like, no. She said, oh, it's gone. I'm like, wait, what? You were rhyming and singing rhyme like spontaneously and it was perfectly about the day? She says, yes, that's what a bard does. I'm like, whoa, you know, my hair stood up. I'm just like, I want a bard. Yeah, so like, you know, this can go scale. I mean, the original art of mentoring had eight people in it. It was me and eight people. And that was in Duval, Washington. And it's, you know, it can scale from that size to 450. And then, you know, you'll hear from David Smartknight in not too long from now on one of these podcasts where he'll be talking about taking it to 2,000 people. As part of an event that had hundreds of thousands of people. So this scales, it's very interesting how well it works. You know, when you're designing natural cycles, it just people automatically know what to do. They just click in and then they start to have so much fun, you know, like it brings out the best. Go ahead, Deborah.
Yeah, I'd love to say a little bit more about that, what it feels like when village building starts happening and how important that's been to me in my life, because remembering those two wedding ceremonies and those celebrations, it was amazing, right? It was a really stressful time. Organizing a wedding is stressful. And we were also in the process of leaving the retreat center and moving to a new place. And that was a big wrench for me. I mean, I chose to do it, but it was a big wrench. And we didn't have a lot of money at the time. And yet the weddings that we were able to experience and enjoy were really beautiful and really abundant. I mean, you know, the venue was donated to us. People brought incredible food, their favorite dishes, and they really outdid themselves. And I remember being really stressed about the decorations, as Ruth was kind of alluding to, and one of my colleagues at the center saying, "Darling, I can do that in my sleep. Do you know what I mean?" And just like putting everything together. And someone else that used to work with us, who's a dear friend of mine, a wonderful gardener, saying, "Oh, I'll just do all the flower arrangements." And, you know, it's like all these and then two friends who are photographers saying, "We'll do the photography." I mean, it was probably the kind of wedding that would cost thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds or dollars. And it really didn't, because the community came together and supported us. And it really, I felt so grateful. And that sense of gratitude as we were writing our vows and as we were thinking about what does it mean to be married, because we hadn't necessarily planned to get married. It wasn't an institution we had particularly strong feelings about as individuals. But as we were talking about, like, wow, it feels like we want to get married, but what does that mean to us? We had this sense of, like, to us, it's a rite of passage. It's a life stage where we step into being full adults who are more than the sum of our parts, in service to our community. And we knew that we were having these weddings that would only be possible with the support of local community, friends, family, and wider community. But also we wanted to make promises to these communities that we would try and be our best selves and be in service to them and support them as well. And we were asking for their support to try and, you know, be good adults and be married and all this kind of stuff. And we take those things seriously. I mean, unfortunately, we don't live in either of those places anymore, but we feel the heartstrings, we feel the ropes of connection to those places and those people. And when there have been difficulties, we've gone back and helped when we can, you know, whether it's just one set of friends that need our help or something like that. And we feel very connected to those communities. And everywhere we go, we now try and build that sense of community. And it's a little bit like nature connection. I feel like when I have really deep nature connection, my gratitude for the beauty and the abundance of nature and how it supports me flows out in my desire to serve nature and be a good contributor, you know, in the web of life, be a good participant, be a good relative. And it's the same in community. When I feel that sense of community building and I feel that sense of how much people are supporting me, it just makes me want to be a good citizen, a good community member, to build community more. It becomes this like flow of value and reciprocity. Anyway, sorry.
Sorry.
I'm getting emotional thinking about it all.
Oh, that is so touching, though. It's exactly what the world needs right now, too. I mean, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about how in this polarized world, this is so essential right now. And it makes me emotional as well. You know, this just a beautiful, beautiful story, you know, coming out of the marriage of, you know, Eight Shields and village building and nature connection and Deborah and Root. It's beautiful. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. And Root, what are your thoughts here?
I'll give one more example. I take those vows very seriously. So I was making vows to Deborah, but I was also making vows to the people that support us. And I wanted to say, like, you can count on me when you need me. And that's still true. We get lots of phone calls from folks from that community up in Scotland, and we stay in touch. And similarly, from the other folks on the other side of the water, there was one couple that was, they were getting stressed out because they didn't have enough childcare for their five-year-old. And I said, well, I can be your uncle. You can fly me in. And they did. They flew me in for a month. And I basically lived with them and did some childcare and did some cooking and did some playing in the snow. It was wintertime, which is really great for me because I haven't played in the snow in forever. And I don't know if you've ever played with a five-year-old in the snow. Like, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. And we did all the ways. And I think they were just really amazed that I was willing to do that. And they really value that. And I'm part of that family. And I said to them, like, look, it's like, yeah, I take those vows really seriously. And if you ever need me again, just call and I'll show up. And I can be the extra adult that you happen to need. You know, so like, this is another part of village building, is just like expanding the capacity. And this is a theme that you'll see kind of showing up over and over again whenever we, as we do more of these, John. I think like one of the themes is kind of like, we're taught that our capacity is limited. And I think one of the nice things about growing a village, or re-villaging as I like to call it, is that it's really about increasing the capacity in lots of different ways.
It's beautiful. You know, I was talking to Arnaud Gagné, who's currently in Nova Scotia, but they're moving back to BC. And he was saying, you know, I want to tell a story about how I use H shields. That's really different, I think, you know, and I'm like, great, what is it? He said, well, you know, I was getting ready for a vision quest and I was with all these people in BC and there was a Salish man there, traditional local Salish man. And as he was talking to Arnaud, as they were both getting ready for this quest experience, you know, this man kept saying to Arnaud, well, in my culture, we do this. In my culture, we do that, you know, and Arnaud kept like feeling really sort of impoverished because he couldn't say in my culture, because he didn't have a culture. And he started to feel sad, like impoverished, right? But then he realized, no, wait a minute. Actually, this H Shields village building, that's my culture. And he began to realize that he needed to recognize that, you know, the lack of culture that builds connection, that state of impoverishment, as Dr. Bill Sutherland likes to say, is actually a good place for us to realize, you know, because the moment we do, then we realize, oh, I need to build culture. I need culture. And we call that culture repair, or as revillaging, as Root just mentioned. You know, and Arnaud, actually, he made his vision quest about deepening his commitment to be in service by building culture, you know, using the H. Shields model. And he's gone ahead and done beautiful things. And him and his wife now are working with tracking connection pathways. And they're now working with families with young children, because there's a huge need in that regard, you know, to apply, you know, village building on the family scale, essentially, and help them understand the need for aunts and uncles and so on. You'll get to hear that from Arnaud himself in one of the other episodes. But it just brought me to that place, you know, that what the three of us are doing is helping people with tools for revillaging, putting back what has been lost. And they're, you know, the principles are just principles. They're just design principles. There's no one way to do it, you know. You know, if, you know, you're in India and you're doing it there, you're going to do it differently than if you're in Ireland and you're doing it there. In South Africa, it's very different. You know, people are doing it differently in different places, but they are looking at their local needs and they're adapting to their local circumstance. And they're looking at the principles to see what they can do to help influence towards better connection among people, nature, and themselves. So yeah, that's kind of our general story, but you'll get to hear a lot more from the three of us with interviewing different people, because there's so many cool stories that need to be lifted up. And that's just what we're going to do. And we're going to build more villages and there'll be more weddings based on this wonderful, fun model. So as we wrap up here, I'd love to hear one more thing from you, Deborah, and one more thing from you, Root, on our way out in way of closing. And thank you both so much for agreeing to this. And I'm really excited to be working with you again. You know, the pandemic and all of that interruption and all the inertia, and you know, it's just really nice to bring the band back together. That's how I feel. So I can't wait to play some music with you. Go ahead, Deborah.
Thanks, John. Yes, it's really fun to be exploring all this again. And it's really fun to be able to do it from this new place that we're in. And as you were talking then, I was just thinking about how what a journey Ruten I have been on to try and find home and somewhere that we can build village. And now it feels like such a blessing. I'm coming full circle to my gratitude at the beginning to be here and do that. And some of the really, really simple ways that we're starting to do it, you know, with shared food and potlucks and seasonal celebrations and thinking about how we can support our neighbours in really easy ways, you know, just having a WhatsApp group where people say, I need some cheese for the mac and cheese I'm making for my kids' dinner, or can someone give me a lift to the train station? It's like it's happening. And it's not rocket science, you know? So we've talked about revillaging a lot, and we haven't talked a lot about what that might look like yet. And of course we will in future podcasts and sessions that we run, but it's not rocket science. It feels really good, and it just makes life more worth living and makes everything more fun. And, you know, our social life is so much better than it was a few months ago now that we have all these great neighbors.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Deborah.
And I guess I'll just mention that there's diversity too. So yes, we have a bunch of great neighbors, and they're not all the same. They have some differences of opinion. And I think that's part of it. As soon as you get enough people in a room, you're going to find some different viewpoints, you know. And I think one of the things that I really value is being able to, one of the words we use is tolerance, but that's not quite it. It's to be able to respect, I think, is really what I'm going for, to kind of respect that there are folks that have different points of view. And that even though we might not agree about everything, there often is a lot of overlap that we can find, particularly if we're concerned about some similar things, if we're concerned about children's welfare and well-being, or if we're concerned about what kind of gardening is going to be happening nearby, or if we're concerned about, the economic health and well-being of the neighborhood and the local town that we live in. It's like there's a number of places where we do overlap and we can find common ground. And so without taking away from the differences and the diversity, I think what village building points to is like, where can we find those overlaps and those common ground places? And to start there and then to kind of build, that's the building piece. It's just like, let's see. How far we can take this, how much deeper we can make this.
That's beautiful. Common context. Yes, we have lots of reasons to do that today as well. You know, just concern about our earth and the well-being of our people as a global family is a great need. And I am just really honored and thankful to have this conversation with the two of you. And I'm so excited about our next one. What's it going to be? Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks so much. Tune in again.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. You can find everything related to the podcast and our current offerings at trackingconnections.net. We'll see you next time.